Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Christine Herman. In 2014, Michael Brown was shot and killed by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, and the activism that came after that shooting, and unfortunately the deaths of many others like Sandra Bland, Eric Garner, and Laquan McDonald, has changed the national conversation about race and policing. Many Black residents in Champaign-Urbana also remember another name. Kewan Carrington was 15 years old when 10 years ago today he was shot and killed by a white Champaign police officer. The shooting happened after a neighbor suspected that Carrington was breaking into a home, when in fact he was trying to get into his aunt's house where he had been living. Carrington was also unarmed. If you don't experience this issue personally, you might be used to just seeing these names in the news. But 10 years later, the people who knew Kewan are still dealing with the pain of losing him, even as they advocate locally for more accountability from police and solutions to gun violence. So today, we're going to do something a little different on the 21st. We'll step away from the mic and hear from several people who knew Kewan Carrington. They came into the studio to talk with each other and reflect on the years since he was killed. We'll start with Jamar Brown, who worked for the city of Champaign when Kewan died, speaking with his uncle Sean Williams, a Champaign business owner who knew Kewan and his family. Sean starts by recounting where he was 10 years ago today.
I was at the barbershop and I was cutting hair. And one of my brothers called me and said, hey, man, you know, you always like to get involved with the community. Well, you got a lot of community work ahead of you right now because the police just killed a 15-year-old young man named Kewan Carrington. Phones started ringing and conversations started going on. How did this happen to a young man 15 years old in our community? You know, what happened? Who done this? And what was the reasoning behind it? People started rallying. Candlelight vigils were starting to get planned. You know, rushing to the family's aid, just trying to find out what the immediate needs were. Where were you at that time, Jamar?
Like you, I more remember the after effect. At that time, I was on the Human Relations Commission for the city of Champaign. So the killing of Kewan was definitely what catapulted me to really just dive in head first, no holds bars, and whatever it takes to help this community, I was in 110%. We were doing police work, you know, and police complaint process. We were doing that type of thing prior to this, but it really sent the commission into overdrive because now we really had something to really kind of sink our teeth in and actually do some work that what I felt was very meaningful for the community, especially the community that I grew up in.
Yeah, I think back then we both kind of it shocked the whole community and rocked our community. So at that time, my barbershop was like a hub for the North End community. So, I mean, you had young folks that were rallying together that I remember that candlelight visual vividly. There was some kids that put it together, but it was to a magnitude where they couldn't even hold it together. I mean, I remember that night meeting on Beardsley Street, and it was probably maybe 1,000 kids and adults. We were trying to just play whatever role we could play to try to make sure that everybody was calm and everything went smooth that night. But even the days after that, I mean, you still had Kewan's friends that were mad, and they were talking about destructing the community and property and even having a conversation with young folks as they marched from the funeral to my shop, just tears and mad, just having those conversations with young folks saying, that's not going to help Kewan if you tear up any property. What can we do to create a legacy for Kewan? We spiraled so many different groups after that. I mean, it just sent our involvement, our community involvement, and our unifying on one common goal to say this should never happen to our community again.
The other piece of this, I mean, there's no amount of good that we can do to bring Kewan back. There's no amount of good that's going to ever make his family fill that void of him being gone. But I think that the work that we've done and continue to do, it will make his death not be in vain, because a lot of people got more involved and a lot of good has been done that was sparked by this, that had this never happened, people would be very complacent.
You know, Jamar, you can definitely tell you're my nephew because we were thinking on the same page, because I was wondering, what's the pulse of the community? Because we don't react until something happens. And so, Do you think a lot of people, since we haven't had any incidents with police and young folks in such a while, do you think a lot of folks have went back to their own silos?
I think so. There was definitely a surge of people who got involved in politics, in the community. Many groups have started since then. And that surge really lasted for a very long time. I think now a lot of people have pulled back that were heavily involved back then. And I think a lot of it is burnout. When you put yourself out there in the public so heavily, so often, you become the go-to. You become the person who gets the call every single time. And it's taxing. It's taxing on the body. It's taxing on the mind. It's taxing on your family. It's taxing on your work. And there becomes a point where you feel like you don't have control. Because as soon as that phone rings and say, hey, we would love for you to come and speak, then you got to go.
You know, for me personally, Jamar, I still feel as though we're working off of an ancient ship with the African-American community and leaders working together to solve our own issues. I still think that that has not changed. When I say that, I mean our local organizations, our churches, working together. We still haven't found any ways to connect. So in so much of the community work that I do, you know, we're still looking for, we're still in rooms and spaces where people say, where are the leaders at? Where are the people that's in control of masses of people to get messaging out, things of that nature? So we're still having the same conversations that we were having. And we still have a whole bunch of Kiwans and Keyshawns and Kenishas out there. And so we're steady letting young folks fall through the cracks of our own community. And I still believe wholeheartedly, if we don't be the first examples to show them the way, then it's very hard for the other communities to connect and support us if we won't even stand up and say what the issues are.
In the last 10 years, I mean, we've definitely made, we have. I mean, just to reiterate, we have made great strides in Champaign. I mean, I think the school district has gotten better. The police department also has just become, first of all, it's become more diverse than it's been in my lifetime.
mine too.
So definitely everybody, we've all made strides. But just like everything else, we all can go a lot further. And I think one thing that gets lost is that 10 years ago when this happened with Kiwan, everybody had their own takes on it. People that knew him was like, oh my goodness, he was a loving kid. He had dreams. He had aspirations. But the outside world, when they heard about this, they're like, oh, it's just another thug. He should have been at school somewhere. And it's like, well, regardless of how you feel about him, there were people who loved him. There were people around. So, I mean, that's family. They're still hurting. And there were other friends that were his age, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds that loved him. And this was their friend. So whether you like him or not, there were people who loved him. And those individuals are still hurting, and they're hurting badly 10 years later. And because that hurt has never, ever been addressed, because they either didn't say anything to anyone, nobody heard the cries, nobody answered the cries, nobody recognized them. Some of that is what we see in this community now when we're talking about this violence. People saying, what's this uptick in violence? Well, some of these were Kiwan's friends that are angry at the world because they feel they've lost a friend unnecessarily. So regardless of, again, where you stand on the case, that's where these kids are, and they're hurting. And so moving forward, I think we need to really find something, some way to address these now adults, address that hurt.
You know, Jamar, you made me have a flashback and think about it. Some of his friends, as you were conversating and talking, and you think life just kind of stops there, and these guys are 13 years old, and we're talking about 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. Mm-hmm. But then when we add the numbers up and we say 10 years later and time goes by fast, these guys are 26 years old now. Mm-hmm. You know, being a part of the CU Fresh Start program, I had the tough opportunity to speak with a few of his friends. So these are guys that are armed and dangerous and violent in our community now. And so, unfortunately, one of his best friends, he was murdered. And, you know, right in the neighborhood, right around the corner from the barbershop. So that was one of Kiwan's really close friends. So, you know, so they're in our community, still mad as heck, and raising up
and
other
raising
young
kids
that's mad as heck because issues have not been addressed. In their mindset, people don't care. And so nobody's come to my aid when I was younger, and then nobody asked me, you know, how am I doing? I mean, even with this 10-year interview, I think it's going to help. It's going to spark that up, and we can identify some of these folks, and hopefully they'll be able to come out and say, hey, man, I need some help. Hopefully that happens. But, I mean, it's some of these folks that probably been incarcerated and that's back in our community that really needs some mental health treatment and some counseling and some conversations, some love, you know, a hug. But I do believe this 10-year conversation, dialogue, this is the only way the Kiwan legacy can go, can continue to live in our community and thrive, is by us having a conversation, because we need to always remember Kiwan.
That's Champaign residents Sean Williams and Jamar Brown. I'm Christine Herman, and you've been listening to The 21st. You heard Sean and Jamar talk about all the things they did right after Kiwan's death 10 years ago today. Sean was running a business. Jamar was working for the city of Champaign at the time. Both were already adults who were active members of their community. But Jamie Gatson was only 15, the same age that Kiwan was. And in the 10 years since then, he's dealt with the loss of his friend in lots of ways, including through music. In our second conversation this hour about the death of Kiwan Carrington, Jamie Gatson speaks with his mentor, William Patterson, who's now an engineering lecturer at the University of Illinois. Here's Jamie.
You know, you already know, I didn't even want to do this interview. Mm-hmm. And it's just because, like, everybody hit me up, like, yo, I want you to come talk about Kiwan. But it's like, okay, I keep giving y'all these stories. When y'all gonna actually help us? You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people want our story, but they're not willing to support us. You got to understand it's a difference, because where I'm from, the north end of Champaign, we already expected to fail at a young age. So a lot of people say they gave us help, but in reality, they didn't. Jay Sean, which is one of my close friends who was with Kiwan when he got killed, he wasn't given help. And to this day, that still is something that eats at him. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of people say they gave us help, but how? It's 2019. We still hurting. You know what I'm saying? So how have they gave my friends help? I'm not talking about the people that wasn't affected by this. I'm talking about the people that was around Kiwan. How have they gave us help? So I feel like telling Kiwan's story, keeping his name alive, that's my purpose. You know what I'm saying? I needed an outlet. Music became my therapy. I started taking music serious in 2009. I wanted to help others fighting depression or going through something. So everywhere I go, like, I always keep the story alive. I keep his name alive, because without that moment, that situation, like, ain't no telling where or what I would be doing. Because you got to understand, back in 2009, after he passed away, a lot of my friends dropped out of school. You know what I'm saying? We lost a lot of friends to the system. You know what I'm saying? We didn't get help. And my thinking was, my music is going to help us cope, help us heal. But I'm also going to stand up for what I believe in, because I felt like when it happened, I didn't stand up enough. So I feel like I had to do something. So,
how old were you? How old were you?
I was 15 at the time.
So 15, and you talk about not knowing what to do. Even adults didn't know what to do at that moment. So don't let that weigh on you within that context. But you said a couple things that I want to touch on with you. One was, a lot of your homies fell prey to the system. When you talk about the system, what do you mean?
In the means of a lot of them dropping out, they turned to the streets. You know what I'm saying? Because they wasn't given help. They had to deal with that depression by themselves, or not being able to talk with people, or when they talk to people, they were looked at a certain way. So, you know what I'm saying? They turn to the streets, and that end up getting them either thrown in jail or just lost into the stereotype of a black male. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the organizations that have been made since the Kiwan situation are pushing to give the youth an outlet.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm not going to say that there's no help now. Mm-hmm. And they are doing the correct thing by trying to save the youth, because the people my age ain't trying to hear that no more. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard to break through to people my age.
Sure.
They already stuck in their ways. They doing what they going to do now.
Sure. I want to encourage you and your peers to know that even though there's been tragedy, that we still have value and worth. And what you've been able to do is say, hey, you know, I've been around the world. I've seen some things and people want to hear our story.
Yeah.
Right. Hip hop is that story. Right. That provides an outlet for folks to see into that experience. So as long as you keep on doing and thriving and representing the struggle, it always provides an opportunity for promise to emerge and for you to continue to make the connections that takes your crew beyond the moment. Right.
Exactly. And that's why this is so important to me, because, you know what I'm saying? I just want them to see that we still matter, you know what I'm saying? We still can make it. So by me trying to take this to another level, I'm trying to show my homies, you know what I'm saying, that we gonna make it, you know what I'm saying? Don't give up, because once I make it, we made it, you know?
But now here's what I want you to recognize. You are making it. It ain't when you make it. It's not the moment. You're that leadership that everybody's looking for. You're Jay Sean's leadership. You're showing him that y'all's story is bigger than the block, but the block needs to be heard. You just have to see. You have to step outside yourself so you can see yourself, step back in yourself so you can be yourself. You'll be everything you need to be based on that. We're going to stop there because I want that in your head to build from that moment.
That's William Patterson speaking with his mentee, Jamie Gatson, in our studio. Thanks again to Jamie Gatson, William Patterson, Jamar Brown, and Sean Williams. We'll have longer versions of both of those conversations on our website, 21stshow.org. And special thanks also to Alex Coleman and Jill Clements for their help. And coming up after the break, a psychology professor at Knox College shares his own experience with a rare form of amnesia, where his memory actually rebooted itself every few minutes. We'll hear from him and a neurologist from the Mayo Clinic. That's in just a minute. I'm Christine Herman. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.